Harrisburg Pike or something like that. We're down, but we, you know, we had a small little house just north of that, and we figured we kind of needed a bigger house. We had had Kimberly, and the bedroom or the house we were in was a house I purchased as a single person, and just kind of in a slab home, and it had a real small. The nursery was, I think, about the size of our current bathroom. It's real tiny, but we started thinking through, you know, hey, we've got to do something for a home, and we were a part of the Southwest Grace Brethren Church at that time. And so we found a place up in Delaware, and I liked the Delaware area because my hope and thought was that I still wanted to continue pastoring and ministering in some capacity, but I wasn't sure that I wanted to be full-time. So I kind of looked around, and you know, there were, I think, 6 or 7 Grace Brethren churches all within a 20-minute drive of the intersection where we kind of put our little pin down. And I thought, wow, that would give me opportunity at any number of Grace Brethren churches, which is what my ordination was in, the Grace Brethren Church. I went to a Grace Brethren seminary. So that was my thinking, is that, okay, this will give me the greatest opportunity for God to use me maybe at one of these churches. And I'm sure I could probably find a place. I knew most of the pastors at these churches. And like anything else, they're always kind of looking for additional help. And, you know, they don't want to always have to pay staff and other things. And I was more than willing. I'm like, I would just love to plug in, and I could probably be a resource for this. So we kind of were going to visit different churches. Well, Amy's church was the large Grace Brethren church under Pastor Custer up at Polaris. And so obviously we visit that. Her family is there. And almost immediately, Pastor Custer and then even Pastor Steve at the time, when they saw Amy and I show up and they saw me there at the church, immediately started to ask questions. What are you guys doing and what's in your heart? And immediately I began to, what I thought was be recruited. We would like you here. We would like you here. In fact, I had a conversation with Pastor Steve, who said, hey, you know, Pastor Jim's going to be retiring, and it looks like I'll probably be tapped to maybe be the next senior pastor. And he said, well, I would love to have you stick around and join us here at the church, because I'd love some guys that could join me in the pulpit. And instead of it being me, we could have a team that would teach and shepherd. And he's like, I would love to have you a part of that. And so we started talking and thinking, you know, about where we're going to be. And Amy and I ultimately decided to stay there at Grace. And my expectation was that I was going to get the chance to plug in and to be used there, not necessarily as paid pastoral staff, because I wasn't looking for that, but as possibly just lay staff or being a part of the pastoral staff there without having to be paid. I thought that was a pretty good deal. You know, they don't have to pay me. I love to be, you know, available. I get a chance to teach and even to preach. And Pastor Steve talked about allowing a couple of us to share the pulpit and teach on a regular basis. And that was an exciting opportunity. Well, that was what I was thinking. This is what God wants. This is how God is going to use me. And so we made our decision to be there at that church and to plug in. And so we start attending and nothing's really happening. And then some things happened with Pastor Steve, and he wasn't around anymore, and some other stuff started kind of happening, and Pastor Custer would come up to me every once in a while, and he'd say, how come you're not, like, on the elder board yet? And I'd say, I don't really know, that's not up to me. And he's like, well, you ought to be up on the elder board. I'm like, it's not up to me. Somebody hasn't invited, somebody hasn't asked. He's like, well, what are you doing up here? I'm like, I don't know, I've offered to teach, I've wanted to do a Bible study, but there's no place that I can plug in. I'm trying. And he's like, well, that's not right. And so he would, and every time I would see him, he'd bring it up again. So finally one day I just said, well, you know what, you want me on the elder board, then you got to say something to somebody, because it's not up to me. And certainly I got a phone call then from somebody, and I went through the process, went through the exam, went all through all that kind of stuff, and ultimately end up on the elder board. But I'm still looking for opportunity to teach, and they have ABFs, and they had some rooms and stuff, and I even offered, hey, can I just start an ABF? But no, I can't do that. You know, we have certain things that are in place, you know. So for 2 years, I literally got a chance to do nothing. And it was frustrating. You know, I had been, ever since, even before seminary, I was doing some teaching and I was doing Bible studies and stuff. And then in seminary, I pastored a church. When I got out of seminary, I came here to start a church. I was preaching every Sunday. And so I'm up here and I'm literally not doing anything. And I'm getting frustrated. And many of you know Steve Schmeckel. And Steve and I started talking. And Steve's like, well, let's just kind of do our own thing. And I'm like, I've tried. You know, and every time I would approach the leadership, well, we don't really have anything available right now. I'm like, but you got a room over there. So finally, one day, we were able to convince Gary Webb to let us just take a room. We started doing our own thing. And we started an ABF. And we did some teaching on a regular basis. And long story short, it ended up leading to New Beginnings where I did some stuff. But I'll be real honest with you. That was a frustrating two or two plus years. Because, first off, I didn't show up at the church because I just pursued them. I felt like they had pursued me and wanted me there. And I thought this was God's direction, God leading. It was pretty clear God wanted me there and God was going to use me. And that was the plan. But then it just didn't work out that way. And that was frustrating. It was hard for me to sit on my hands and feel like I'm not being used. And there were times where I would pray and I'd say, you know, God, maybe this was just a mistake. Maybe we got to go somewhere else. There's plenty of other Grace Brethren churches around here. I thought you wanted to use me. I thought this was your plan. Pastor Jim, I mean, the guy in the whole entire fellowship. I mean, he's like the John MacArthur outside of Grace Brethren. And he was asking me to stay. What happened? It was frustrating. It wasn't working out the way that I had thought. And again, it wasn't my plan. My plan was not to go there. I thought this was God's plan. I thought God had told me he wanted me there because of others coming to me, saying, you need to stick around here. We'd love to have you stick around here. It was frustrating. Well, we're going to look at Joseph today. Joseph had, I believe, a similar experience. He was, in his case, specifically told by God. His future was revealed. I didn't have that. But, nonetheless, I thought I knew what God wanted. Joseph had an experience that most of us, probably none of us, have ever really had, which was God revealing directly to him a glimpse into his future. How many of us wouldn't love to have God do the same for us? Here it is. Here's the script. You know? God revealed to him that he would one day become a ruler and to reign over his family. Now remember this, he was a shepherd boy. He was young, 17 years old when he had his dreams, working as a shepherd with his dad. Family wasn't tiny by any means, but it wasn't this huge family. And yet God reveals to him that someday he will rule and reign, at least over his family, which would have been a pretty big deal. He had a pretty nice life at that point. He was working in the family business, helping tend his father's flocks. He was the favorite son, had some nice drip. Chloe, I heard that on an AI video. Got myself some drip. I never heard that before, but he had some nice drip in the robe, right? So God's plan must have come as quite an encouragement to him. Again, how many of us would be kind of going, wow, that's really cool. You know, look at my future. God has revealed this. That's a pretty cool thing. However, things didn't really go as one would expect. And for the next decade plus, probably 12 years or so, his life was a giant roller coaster. Imagine that must have come as a shock in some degrees to him. His brothers started to hate him more and more, toss him into a pit to die, sold him into slavery, and then he ends up in captivity in a foreign land hundreds of miles away from his home. That's a great way to start out God's plan. Lord, what the rule, the reign thing, you forget about that? I'm like a slave now? That's like opposite God of what this dream was? Certainly didn't look like what God had revealed. But, you know, in the midst of that, all of a sudden it did take a positive turn because, you know, he gets purchased by an extremely high-ranking, probably second highest in the kingdom. Gets purchased by him, ends up in his house. Joseph impresses him with his skills and abilities and his faithfulness to his chores. Things are certainly starting to look up. Maybe now they start looking like they're back on track. So I could imagine Joseph saying, okay, Lord, we're back on track here. I can see where this is going because, hey, I'm like over this guy. He's like the captain of the guard. He like hangs out with the Pharaoh. And I'm running his household. That might have been a pretty good encouragement to Joseph. Might have been a good indicator that, okay, things are back on track. But then things take another negative turn and everything comes crashing down when Potiphar's wife repeatedly tries to seduce him. He fends her off, does what he should do, stays faithful to God, and yet she falsely accuses him of rape. The next thing you know, he ends up back in prison. And it wasn't just prison. A little bit later on, it's described as a pit, hole in the ground. the Bible really doesn't reveal what Joseph must have been thinking through all of this. Just basically reveals that he served God and his masters, plural I say there, because of Potiphar and then the chief jailer. He served them faithfully through all of it. So the Bible does reveal that. It really doesn't reveal to us what might have been going through his head. I don't want to put thoughts into his head, but I think it's probably reasonable that this roller coaster that he was on was probably discouraging at times, probably difficult at times. It would be for any of us. God says, here's my plan for you, and everything seems to be going the opposite direction. And even when it starts to look like it turns around, it all comes crashing down. It would be reasonable to assume that it was a bit of a roller coaster and that he might have struggled at times with that. But again, what we are told is that throughout this whole process, he remains faithful. He continues to serve both God and his two masters faithfully, and he is successful in doing that. The Bible tells us that God makes him successful. And that's really what we see today in our passage. Some of the elements from today's teaching is going to reflect some of last week's as well, because that is a theme that goes through this. I'm going to break the passage down into four parts today. The first thing we're going to see is Joseph's circumstances were unfortunate, they were unfair, they were even unjust, but they were part of God's bigger plan. Not just for Joseph, but of his redemptive plan, his plan for Egypt, or for Israel and for the world. So the first thing we'll see is that even though his circumstances were unfortunate, they were part of God's bigger plan. Second, despite his circumstances, Joseph did seek to be used by God in those circumstances. Third, God honored Joseph's desire to be used in those circumstances. And then lastly, we're going to see that even though Joseph's circumstances may not have changed as he had hoped, it's really clear that God was not done with him yet. He wasn't going to leave him there in those circumstances. So let's go ahead and look at those four pieces today. We're going to look at the first four verses. Joseph's circumstances were unfortunate, but they were a part of God's bigger plan for him. Look at verses 1 through 4 of chapter 40. Then it came about after these things that the cupbearer and the baker for the king of Egypt offended their lord, the king of Egypt. Pharaoh was furious with his two officials, the chief cupbearer and the chief baker. So he put them in confinement in the house of the captain of the bodyguard in the jail, the same place where Joseph was imprisoned. The captain of the bodyguard put Joseph in charge of them, and he took care of them, and they were in confinement for some time. Verse 1 tells us that the cupbearer and the baker, they were extremely high officials. In fact, the purpose of the cupbearer was to drink the wine before the Pharaoh did so he wouldn't die. That was a pretty important role. And then you had the baker here providing all of his food, which is also a critical role because pharaohs were always concerned with being poisoned through their food. In fact, the baker here would likely have to taste the food before serving it, most likely in the presence of the pharaoh. So these were some high-ranking officials. And the text tells us that they did something to offend the king. In fact, so much so that it says that he was furious with them. As a result, he threw them into the same jail as Joseph. Verse 3 says that he put them in confinement in the house of the captain of the bodyguard in the jail, the same place where Joseph was imprisoned. The jail was apparently connected to the house of the captain of the guard, Potiphar. We find that elsewhere. But again, it describes it as a pit. This was not a nice accommodation. It wasn't house arrest, even though it was in the house of the captain of the bodyguard. It was described elsewhere, like I said, as a pit. In fact, when they came to get Joseph to go before the Pharaoh to interpret his dreams, it says they took him out of the pit, and he had to shave and clean himself and put on clothes. What's interesting to me here is that it was Potiphar here, if you look at the text again, it was Potiphar himself, the captain of the guard, that actually put Joseph in charge of the prisoners at the jail. Isn't that interesting? Because remember, the reason he's in prison is because Potiphar threw him there because his wife had accused Joseph of rape. And yet, Potiphar still sees something in Joseph to where he's willing to trust him with the care of the prisoners. It wasn't the chief jailer that put Joseph in charge. That I think is one of those neat little side notes. Doesn't have a whole lot to do with our message this morning per se, except I find it interesting that there's something about Joseph's character that even falsely accused, somehow Potiphar still saw within him something he could rely upon in caring for the prisoners in jail. Again, a little bit of a side note, but an interesting thought. We are told here that this confinement with this cupbearer and this baker, verse 4, went on for some time. We're not told how long. There are different estimates as to how long it might have been. Some say it might have been a few months. Some say it might have been as much as a year or two. We don't really know. But the point of this is that it was some time. That's an indication that it wasn't just a couple of days. It was a lengthy period of time. Joseph was now in prison with these individuals without knowing what was going to happen, how long it would all be there, how long he would be there, how long they would be there. Now, we'd be remiss if we didn't see how all of this actually fits into God's plan. Joseph's situation and the circumstances were obviously unfair, they were unjust, they were uncomfortable, they were unfortunate. You like those unwords? I worked on that for a while. All of that is true. So how did any of that fit into God's plan? Well, fortunately for us, we're kind of like Paul Harvey. We know the rest of the story. It's written. We can read ahead. We're all familiar with the story. So we have an advantage that Joseph really doesn't. We know how the story ends. We get an idea of how this fits into God's plan. But Joseph, at that moment, likely didn't. We have no indication in the text that God spoke to him again and said, oh, by the way, don't worry about it. This is all good. This is how it's going to work out. All we're told is that he told Joseph, someday you will rule and reign. And so we have to assume that Joseph is here for this considerable amount of time with these two men, not really knowing. But it wasn't by coincidence that these two individuals, the cupbearer and the baker, ended up in prison next to Joseph, because we know that ultimately this started a sequence of events orchestrated by God to bring Joseph in front of the Pharaoh. These two men, one specifically, is the avenue through which God would take Joseph from prison and have him standing before the most powerful man in the known world at that time. We know that because we know the rest of the story. Joseph likely at that point had speculation. We see here that God is working out his plan for Joseph, even though it may not have looked like it at the time. Now, we do know that Joseph, as he helps these men out, which hadn't happened yet, they hadn't had their dreams yet. All Joseph knows is he's in prison with these two dudes that used to be part of the Pharaoh. We're going to see a little bit later that in his mind he realizes this may be an avenue for getting out. But that wouldn't have happened yet. So what's the takeaway as we look at something like this? Just because our circumstances are unfair, unjust, unfortunate, it doesn't mean that God is not at work, working out his plan or his purpose, both for us and for his bigger plan, even his redemptive plan. We sometimes get focused on our circumstances, wondering how that all fits into God's plan, because we look at it as being a place of misery. We wonder, where is God in all this? When I first ended up at Grace, the church, I was excited. I thought I had it. I thought I knew exactly what God expected, but yet soon it just wasn't working out that way. And I wonder, what are you doing, God? Why did you bring me here if you're not going to use me here? Why do I have to sit on my hands for 2 years? I'll be real frank. I was frustrated at times because I thought, Lord, there are plenty of people that come here every Sunday morning. They sit on their butts in the pew. They never do anything. And here I am, and I want to be used. And you won't use me? Can I just go sit? It's frustrating. But just because our circumstances may not be what we like, doesn't mean that God is not at work. God is not working out his plan. I'm reminded of something Paul wrote regarding his first imprisonment in Rome. You remember, Paul was traveling on the road to Damascus. The Lord does again something with him that we don't often get to experience, which is that a big blast of light knocks him off his horse. It essentially says, you're my chosen instrument. Here's what I'm going to do with you. I'm sending you to the Gentiles. Paul had a roadmap. He knew at that point what God was going to do in terms of the big picture, right? Paul did just that. He began his missionary journeys throughout the Roman Empire, going to city after city, focusing on Gentile churches. He would go to the synagogues first, obviously, but his primary ministry was to the Gentiles. He was preaching the gospel to both Jews and Gentiles with great success, seeing people come to Christ, seeing churches established. However, along the way, he was unfairly and unjustly accused of things, and he ultimately ended up spending 2 years in house arrest with a guard chained to his side. He was allowed to receive visitors during that 2 years, but he wasn't allowed to travel. Makes me wonder if Paul began to wonder, what was God doing? He was a preacher. He was a traveler. He went town to town, preaching the gospel, seeing people come to Christ, setting up and establishing churches. And all of a sudden now, he's under house arrest, can't go anywhere. Sure, he had a couple of opportunities that, you know, people could visit him, but most likely they were probably other believers. But Paul was a missionary to the unsaved. God, what are you doing? Why am I stuck here in a prison? You told me you would send me to the Gentiles. I'm your chosen instrument. Why aren't you using me? But we'll find out in a moment here. The Lord wasn't done. The Lord was using him. In fact, turn to Philippians chapter 1. Look at Paul's perspective on this. Philippians chapter 1, jump down into verse 12. Now I want you to know, brethren, Paul is writing this from prison, from this house arrest. I want you to know, brethren, that my circumstances, being in prison, have turned out for greater progress of the gospel. Wait a minute, doesn't make sense. Wouldn't greater progress of the gospel be Paul out there preaching to the Gentiles, establishing churches, seeing people saved? But he says, my circumstances have turned out for the greater progress of the gospel, so that my imprisonment in the cause of Christ has become well known, check this out, throughout the whole Praetorian Guard and to everyone else. You know who that is? Those were the chief soldiers in the Roman army. They were the elite, the top of the top. And Paul says, the cause of Christ has become well known throughout the whole Praetorian Guard and to everyone else, and that most of the brethren, trusting in the Lord because of my imprisonment, have far more courage to speak the word of God without fear. In other words, Paul says, you know what? My imprisonment has advanced the gospel and has encouraged the brethren. And in one of the most elite places. Things don't often go how we plan. And sometimes we face these unfair, unjust, and unfortunate circumstances like Paul did and like Joseph did. But it doesn't change God's plan for us or his eternal plan for mankind. He's still in control of all of that. And we see that in Joseph as we see him place these two very important men in prison with him. We'll see how that works out in a moment. We'll see how that fits into God's plan. And we see it in Paul. And maybe in our own lives we don't see it quite as glaring, but the truth still holds. We find ourselves in circumstances that aren't uncomfortable. Maybe they're sometimes unjust. But it doesn't mean that God is done with us. It doesn't mean that he's not going to use us. And we'll see what we do with that in just a moment here. But let's move on to the second point, which is, despite his circumstances, Joseph sought to be used by God. Joseph sought to be used by God in spite of his circumstances. While the king's cupbearer and the baker were in prison, God gave them each a dream, but they were unable to understand or to interpret the meaning of it. Look at verses 5 and 6 of chapter 40. Then the cupbearer and the baker for the king of Egypt, who were confined in jail, both had a dream the same night, each man with his own dream, and each dream with its own interpretation, meaning its own meaning. When Joseph came to them in the morning and observed them, behold, they were dejected. He asked Pharaoh's officials who were with him in confinement in his master's house, why are your faces sad today? What we find here is that the dreams were given specifically to them by God. They were a form of direct revelation, and they had to do with their futures. We're going to find out in a minute here. However, they had no way of understanding it. They weren't able to interpret it, says the dreams. But there was somebody who could interpret their dreams. Joseph. And Joseph knew that he could interpret their dreams. Not in his own ability, we're going to see here in a minute, but he knew that that's the way that God could use him. And so what we find here is that Joseph, when he learned of their dreams, he immediately sought to help them interpret and understand those dreams. He sought to be used by God. Look at verses 7 and 8. He asked Pharaoh's officials who were with him in confinement in his master's house, why are your faces so sad? They said to him, we've had a dream, and there's no one to interpret it. Then Joseph said to them, and notice he doesn't say here, oh, you know what, that's my ability, that's my skill. Let me help you out. Look at what he says. Do not interpretations belong to God? Tell it to me. Please. Joseph knew that his ability to interpret dreams was something that only came from God. And as he's there with these men, he makes that clear. Hey, you realize that interpreting your dreams comes from God. Tell it to me. I think it's important to remember that Joseph did not do this on his own ability. He didn't even believe that he could, I don't think, because he says, do not interpretations belong to God. In fact, a little bit later, we'll see this when we get to chapter 41. When he goes before the Pharaoh has dreams, and the Pharaoh says, nobody can interpret these things. And Joseph says something very similar to what he says here, and he says very specifically, it is not in me to be able to interpret your dreams. God will answer. Joseph was fully understanding that his ability to interpret these dreams was something that only came from God. He was an agent to be used by God. And I believe that at this moment, as he is looking at these two men and they have these dreams, his heart was, you know what, the Lord will allow me to interpret these for you. He recognized his role as an agent of God. I believe he sought to be used by God at that moment. Takeaway. When we find ourselves in unfair, unjust, and unfortunate circumstances, I believe we should ask God how He might use us in those circumstances. So oftentimes we're too busy focusing on the circumstances. We're in misery. We don't like it. We have our own ideas of how God might want to use us. My thinking when I went to Grace was that God would use me by preaching and teaching alongside Pastor Steve in the pulpit. That's the way I was expecting God to use me. Wasn't working out that way. It's easy for us to withdraw or feel sorry for ourselves, to lose hope, become discouraged, or maybe even get angry with God over our circumstances and focus on those things. And we stop thinking about, wait a minute, okay, I may not like this right now, but how can God use me while I'm here? He's got me in this position. Let's just figure out a way that He might want to use me. I'm sure there were times in the first century when the apostles in the early church were tempted to feel this way. They faced incredible opposition and persecution. Paul certainly did. Again, I don't want to put too many thoughts into Paul's mind, but I'm sure as he sat in prison there, he was probably getting itchy to be out preaching and teaching. I mean, the guy stood before Greeks at Athens and preached to the masses. And here he is in a prison cell with the same dude chained to him probably day after day. How many times can he hear the gospel? But God must have brought other soldiers in there, and somehow the whole Praetorian Guard heard, it says, the gospel. I want to turn to another passage of the Apostle Paul. It's a little bit lengthy, but it drives home the point that it's not the circumstances, it's how God might use us in those circumstances that we ought to be searching for. 2 Corinthians chapter 4. Again, it's a lengthy passage, but it's hard to shrink this passage without getting the point. 2 Corinthians chapter 4, jump down to verse 7. We have this treasure in earthen vessels so that the surpassing greatness of the power of God and not of ourselves. We are afflicted in every way, but not crushed, perplexed, but not despairing, persecuted, but not forsaken, struck down, but not destroyed, always carrying about in the body the dying of Jesus, so that the life of Jesus may also be manifest in our body. For we who live are constantly being delivered over to death for Jesus' sake, so that the life of Jesus may be manifest in our mortal flesh. So death works in us, but life in you. But having the same spirit of faith, according to what is written, I believe, therefore I spoke. We also believe, therefore we also speak. Knowing that he who raised the Lord Jesus will raise us with Jesus and will present us with you. For all things are for your sakes, so that the grace which is spreading is more and more people may cause the giving of thanks to abound to the glory of God. Therefore, we don't lose heart, but through our outer man, or though our outer man is decaying, yet our inner man is being renewed day by day. For momentary light affliction is producing for us an eternal weight of glory. Notice Paul says light affliction. Have you ever read what Paul, the description Paul gives of his afflictions? They are not light by any stretch of the imagination. But Paul says, for momentary light affliction is producing for us an eternal weight of glory far beyond all comparison. While we look not at the things which are seen, but the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporal, meaning the circumstances around us. But the things which are not seen are eternal, what God does with those circumstances. For we know that if the earthly tent, which is our house, is torn down, we have a building from God, a house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. For indeed in this house we groan, longing to be clothed with our dwelling from heaven, insomuch as we, having put it on, will not be found naked. For indeed while we are in this tent, we groan, being burdened, because we do not want to be unclothed, but to be clothed, so that what is mortal will be swallowed up by life. Now he who prepared us for this very purpose is God. What's the purpose there? The circumstances we suffer through, but ultimately God's glory being drawn out from that? For indeed, while we are in this tent, we groan, being burdened, because we do not want to be unclothed, but clothed, so that the immortal will swallow up in life. Now he who has prepared us for this very purpose is God, who gave us the Spirit as a pledge. Therefore, being always of good courage, knowing that while we are at home in the body, we are absent from the Lord, for we walk by faith, not sight. For we are of good courage, I say, and prefer rather to be absent from the body and to be at home with the Lord. Therefore, we also have as our ambition, whether to be home or absent, to be pleasing to him. For we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, so that each one may be recompensed for his deeds in the body according to what he has done, whether good or bad. If we could summarize that whole section, it's basically that we will suffer, we will have unjust things happen, but that's part of advancing the gospel. That's where our heart and focus ought to be. That's why Paul was able to continue doing what he did in the midst of his light affliction. When Joseph was in prison, he could have just sat back, God, you abandoned me. Let the guys figure out their own dreams. But instead, he recognized he was an agent of the Lord, and the Lord allowed him then to go on and to interpret their dreams. So for us, when we face circumstances that might not fit in our plan, shouldn't we be saying, how can I be used? How might God use me in these circumstances? They're not the circumstances I would have chosen. Maybe it's not the way that I think God could use me most. But how might he use me right here, right now, in those circumstances? Third thing we see is that God honored Joseph's desire to be used. The main point of the next 10 verses, I believe, is to show how God used Joseph to interpret the meaning of each man's dream and to reveal their fate. It's pretty clear in the text. Look at verse 9. We're going to go 9 through probably 20 here. So the chief cupbearer told his dream to Joseph, and he said to him, "In my dream, behold, there was a vine in front of me. And the vine were on the vine were three branches, and as it was budding, its blossoms came out, and its clusters produced ripe grapes. Now Pharaoh's cup was in his hand, or in my hand, so I took the grapes, and I squeezed them into Pharaoh's cup, and I put the cup into Pharaoh's hand. Then Joseph said to him, 'This is the interpretation of it. The three branches are 3 days. Within 3 more days, Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to your office, and you will put Pharaoh's cup in his hand according to your former custom when you were his cupbearer. Only keep in mind, when it goes well with you, and please do me a kindness by mentioning me to Pharaoh and get me out of this house. For I was in fact kidnapped from the land of the Hebrews, and even before I have gone or done nothing, that they should have put me into this dungeon.' When the chief baker saw that he had interpreted favorably, he said to Joseph, 'I also saw in my dream, and behold, there were 3 baskets of white bread on my head. In the top basket, there were some all sorts of baked food for the Pharaoh, and the birds were eating them out of the basket on my head.' Then Joseph answered and said, 'This is its interpretation. The 3 baskets are 3 days. Within 3 more days, Pharaoh will lift your head from you and hang you on a tree, and the birds will eat your flesh off of you.'" Ouch. So, in the first dream, the wine bearer sees these branches, there's 3 branches, and there's grapes on. He grabs the grapes, crushes them into the cup, gives it to the Pharaoh, and that symbolized that he would be put back in that place. The 3 branches represented 3 days, and the fact that he was still doing his duties, making wine and handing it to the Pharaoh, that indicated that God was going to restore him to that position. In eagerness then, the second dude, me, do mine. But that didn't turn out so well because he's got a basket on his head with a bunch of bread in it and birds are eating the bread out of it. And so Joseph has the joy of announcing to him, well, it's not so good for you because in 3 days, you're going to be hung. Now, according to what we see in verses 20 and 22, it all came about exactly as Joseph had interpreted. Look at verse 20. "Then it came about on the 3rd day, just as Joseph had said, which was Pharaoh's birthday, that he made a feast for all his servants. And he lifted up the head of the chief cupbearer and the head of the chief baker among his servants. He restored the chief cupbearer to his office, and he put the cup into Pharaoh's hand. But he hanged the chief baker just as Joseph had interpreted to them." Proof that God had indeed used Joseph to interpret these dreams. So what we find here is that it came out exactly as Joseph had interpreted, which tells us that God honored Joseph's desire to be used. He gave him a proper interpretation of the dream and used him for exactly the way that he wanted to use Joseph. I think our takeaway for something with this is pretty simple, and it's that we shouldn't allow our circumstances to distract us from being used by God, because he will use us. Again, maybe not always the way we think, but he will when our desire is to be used by him. And again, it may not always be the way we want. We can see here that Joseph desired to be out of prison. He says that here. He says, "Please remember me." He wanted those circumstances to change. He wanted God to use him in a different way, out of prison, but God chose at that moment to use him in prison, and he honored his willingness to be used by him in prison. So while we should seek to serve God in our circumstances, we also have to remember here that God will honor our desire to be used by him, even in the most unpleasant, unfortunate circumstances. Joseph didn't wait till he was out of prison to go back to serving the Lord. He found a way to serve the Lord in prison. Now, the last thing we see here, and it's really disappointing in many respects, look at verse 23 again. The last verse in this chapter, "Yet the chief cupbearer did not remember Joseph, but forgot him." No good deed goes unpunished. The last point is that our circumstances may not or Joseph's circumstances may not have changed as he hoped, but we'll see that God was not done with him yet. And I think that's key. We often focus on wanting those circumstances to change, and the evidence that God is with us is when those circumstances change. And here, certainly, it didn't turn out the way that Joseph expected. The chief cupbearer just didn't remember him, just went about his business and forgot. Think about this for a moment. Joseph recognized the possibility here, because earlier he says, hey, you're going to be raised back up. You're going to be back with the Pharaoh. You're going to be right there in his presence. Tell him about me. Remember, tell him about me. And I'm sure at that moment, the cupbearer probably, yes, I'll do that, because he got good news. And so I would imagine Joseph's hopes were up. He is now being able to see, oh, look, God's going to use this guy. My chance to get out of prison is finally here. This is the Lord's answer to me. And so as 3 days pass, Joseph's probably in prison waiting to hear. And a day goes by, no news. But you know what? Okay, it's only been a day. Another day goes by, maybe it's a week. Well, haven't heard. But you know what? Certainly he wouldn't forget about me. He told me he wouldn't forget about me. Month goes by. At some point, hope's just gone, isn't it? Have you ever been in that kind of situation yourself? You know, where you're expecting news or expecting something to happen. Maybe you applied for a job or any number of other things, and maybe you played the lottery, I don't know. And you're just waiting, you know? And at the initial part of it, you've got a lot of hope and expectation, right? It all looks really good from your perspective, but the longer it goes, that hope fades. And so Joseph's circumstances didn't change as he had hoped. But again, we know the end of the story. It actually is the cupbearer that 2 years later, finally remembers and tells the Pharaoh about Joseph. Joseph's circumstances didn't change for the next 2 years. So our takeaway, I believe, is that just because our circumstances don't change, or at least change in accordance with what we think or hope they should, doesn't mean that God has forgotten us. It doesn't mean that God is done with us. Maybe he's just got different plans. Maybe his timing is different than ours. We don't really know. In Joseph's case, there's more an issue of timing, I believe, because again, 2 years later, what Joseph hoped would happen, that the cupbearer would remember him. That's exactly how it plays out. But the Lord hadn't forgotten about Joseph. He was still at work. We don't know how he might have used Joseph. We do know that Joseph is in prison serving faithfully. He was in charge of the prisoners. The text tells us that the Lord made him successful at doing that, even though his circumstances hadn't changed. And so just because our circumstances don't change or work out just the way we think doesn't mean that God has forgotten us or that God is done with us. It goes back to my illustration from the beginning, and we'll close with this. So I'm up at Grace and struggling in 2 years, wondering what God's going to do. Well, that's interesting. 2 years with Joseph, 2 years with me. Anyway, I'm frustrated. It's getting a little bored, you know, wondering why God's not doing anything, why I can't use my gifts and abilities, and but, as I'd mentioned, finally found a place. I was finally brought into the elder board and became a part of the elder board at Grace. Also was able to work out some stuff with Gary to where I was able to start a small ABF Bible study. But what actually, to me, was pretty cool was even though I never had an opportunity to stand up, and I love teaching, I love preaching too. They're similar but yet different. Okay? And I love doing both. And I've had opportunity to preach in front of a handful of people, to preaching, in fact I preached at Grace one time, which is an interesting experience when you know there's 2,500 people out in front of you and you can't see their faces. I much prefer this. But My point is that I love preaching, but God did not want to use me that way for almost 12 years. But what we're doing here is actually a product of what God did over the course of that time, because ultimately, over the course of time, I met Eric, and Eric was teaching New Beginnings, and Eric was moving on to another church, and Eric needed somebody to start teaching in the New Beginnings ABF, and asked if I'd be interested in doing that, and that's how I met some of you folks and some of the others that were originally part of what we're doing here. And you know what is interesting to me is that if I had to choose any point in my personal ministry in the last almost, 35, maybe 40 years, it has been here. I don't say that to flatter anyone. I don't know what it is, but it has been the most encouraging of all my ministry over the years. God has used me exactly as He wanted to use me, and it isn't exactly how I thought He might use me, but I'm really cool with that. Because God has done some really neat things. Even with, one of the things I think about oftentimes is because of the size of our body here, and some people will say, you know, you're only successful if the church grows and you become really big, and I've actually been asked by others, how come you didn't just go to a bigger church? And I said, well, because I like what God is doing. I don't need that bigger church. I like what God is doing. But also, there's been many times in my personal ministry where I would not have been able to do what I do outside of Renew if I were a full-time pastor. I love the fact that I have people that I've been able to share with at work, people that I've been able to counsel at work. There was one woman a number of years ago that was going through a divorce and would come and knock on my door. She, last I heard, began to attend a church. It sounds like she had given her life to Christ, and she was attending a church on a regular basis. She had never done that before. There's a woman at my office now currently that is going through a really tough time. And I've been able to encourage her and chat with her and share the gospel with her on so many occasions. You know what? You know how many pastors don't have opportunity outside their church to be able to do that? And I'm not saying one is better than the other, but I look at what God has done. He may not have used me the way I thought He was going to use me, but He's used me the way that He's wanted to use me. And that's been a blessing to me. But through much of that, I've had to simply say, okay, God, yeah, I thought you should have done this, and you've not done that, but my desire has been, then use me where you've got me. Every morning when I wake up, I have my prayer time in the morning. The prayer that I pray every morning is that God will give me an opportunity to share the gospel with somebody at work. Doesn't always happen. And even though I'm working from home and I wonder, how is this going to happen when I'm at home? Conversations will happen over the phone. He'll open up opportunities. He'll provide ways to do that. So I've had to learn in my life not to be disappointed that God didn't take me here or use me where I thought He was going to use me, but rather the fact that He's using me where I'm at in the circumstances. And sometimes they've been great, sometimes they've been not so great. Sometimes they've been circumstances I didn't want to be in. Sometimes they've been circumstances that were okay to be in. But either way, it's been, Lord, okay, not what I thought, but use me here. And like I said, if I could choose right now, if I could go back 30, 40 years, and if God would ask me, okay, here's the pot, I would say, no, put me right where He's got me right now. I love shepherding Renew. I love the fact that I have a secular job working around people that don't know the Lord. I wouldn't want it any other way. So, we look at Joseph this morning, and what we see is that he was in difficult circumstances and situations. He was a slave. It didn't look like it was working out the way that God wanted it to work out, but what we see is that God was still at work in him. God had not abandoned him. And that in the midst of those circumstances, Joseph chose to continue allowing God to use him in those circumstances. And God honored those desires and did use him. He didn't ultimately change the circumstances right away, but we know that he does, and he ultimately will. Amen?